Hello, my name is Diana Dee, a lecturer at the School of Healthcare Sciences, and welcome to Behind the Health Statistic. Today's podcast will be exploring the importance of vitamin D. Information from the National Library for Medicine 2020 tells us that our vitamin D levels will vary wherever we are in the world. Nice in 2014 and Crow and others in the British Medical Journal more recently in 2019 highlighted how a third of UK adults who were tested for vitamin D were in fact deficient. This appeared to be more common amongst those from black and minority ethnic communities. However, a survey by the British Nutrition Foundation in 2020 revealed that 49% of us were unaware of UK guidelines for supplementing our vitamin D levels. This podcast will hopefully bring to the attention of our listeners practical ways we can all take to help improve and boost our vitamin D levels. Firstly, we're going to hear from myself talking to Dr. Sarju Patel and fourth year medical student Kendra, who articulated a local public health event raising awareness of vitamin D in Grangetown. As part of this section, we'll also be hearing from students who took part, members of the public, community leads, visitors from this successful event. As we'd like to address the importance of vitamin D across the lifespan, next we'll be hearing an interview with one of my fellow academics, Ricky, who will be interviewing Grangetown health visitor Beth Hellier, talking about the importance of vitamin D in childhood. We now go over to the main interview with Dr. Sergeant Kendra.
Good morning, both. So this morning I'm going to be talking to Kendra Jean-Nouadi and Dr. Sarju Patel all about vitamin D. So the reason behind this podcast is because Kendra, as a medical student at Cardiff University, ran a successful vitamin D outreach event in the local Grangetown community, which was quite successful. It involved student nurses, it involved student doctors, and we were also luckily joined by some Cardiff University journalism students. So the whole point in this podcast is to try and enlighten the general public about the importance of vitamin D and to try and demystify some of the issues that perhaps create barriers around the subject. So let's start off, Kendra, in regards to telling us a little bit about why vitamin D is such an important topic, why it's a public health subject, and why perhaps you held the event.
Thank you, Diana. So the reason why we held the event is following COVID, there was a lot more talk about healthcare inequalities and issues that affect different subgroups in the population. And just between my friends and I, we're part of the African Caribbean Medical Association Cardiff. We found out about vitamin D deficiency in our second year of university, and it was a big shock to us. We both were black and we didn't know that this issue could affect us. So we started to explore the issue more and more, and following the pandemic with people staying inside, we saw that vitamin D deficiency was an issue that could be affecting lots of people because we get it mostly from sun absorption. So we thought we'd educate the local population. Grangetown is very diverse and there are a range of cultures there that could have benefited from this topic because they were at risk of vitamin D deficiency.
So you mentioned skin tone there, but is everybody at risk of vitamin D deficiency, or is it just people with black skin you mentioned?
So living in a country like the UK, approximately 20% of our population is vitamin D deficient. However, there are some population groups that are at higher risk. So that is people with darker skin, so African communities or South Asian communities. There's also the elderly that are at higher risk, young children as well, and breastfeeding mothers are at high risk of vitamin D deficiency.
What is the importance of vitamin D to our bodies and health and well-being?
So my understanding is that vitamin D acts like a hormone in our body, and when certain sunlight rays hit your skin, it converts a substance in your skin into vitamin D. And this is used to help you absorb calcium, which is really important for your bone health. But other signs of low vitamin D can be really nonspecific. So people often complain of bone pain or having low energy or being of low mood. And these things can have all been linked to vitamin D deficiency. So it is quite an important hormone in your body, and it can have widespread effects if you don't have enough of it.
So that's really good to know about some of those symptoms. So you said that we get vitamin D from the sun. So we need to go outside to get it into our bodies. But is there other ways of getting vitamin D then? So can we get it through the windows? Can we get it through sunbeds?
So common misconceptions about ways to get vitamin D is through the means you mentioned. So you can't get it through windows. You can't get it through sunbeds because there's a certain type of sun ray we need from the sun to absorb, to create vitamin D. And we can't get this particular sun ray from through the windows or through tanning beds, only from direct sunlight. So you have to go outside. But other sources of vitamin D or other ways to get it healthily is through your diet. So it's found in low amounts in things like eggs and certain meats as well. But it's well agreed that the best way to get enough vitamin D is through sun exposure on your skin.
But isn't too much sun harmful? Is it harmful in any way to get too much sun or too much vitamin D?
So, yes. And this is why we have to weigh up, doing everything in moderation. So when you are going outside to get enough sunlight to make vitamin D, you shouldn't be covered up. So that's clothing or wearing sunscreen. Sorry, I forgot your question.
So getting it from the sun, can it be harmful? Can getting too much vitamin D be harmful for health? So can spending a lot of time in the sun, we know, is harmful. It could cause sunburn. We know that it's a potential cancer risk. So what is your advice for people? Is there a particular time when we should go out in the day? For how long, perhaps?
So the advice is to go out like midday when the sun is at its highest. And not for too long, so 15-20 minutes, unexposed skin, no sunscreen on, that is long enough so you can get enough vitamin D, but also not burn your skin, which is also linked to other things like cancers, which we don't want, of course.
So how long should we be spending in the sun then? So, for example, my skin tone is a little bit lighter than yours. I hope you don't mind me, pointing that out. So should I spend less time in the sun than you, perhaps, or somebody who's more fair skinned? What's the advice then, roughly? Do we need a lot of time in the sun, like hours, or are we talking about minutes?
Definitely minutes. And a really big misconception, I know amongst African communities, is that we're immune to getting sunburns and skin cancers. So sun advice is actually really important for everyone, I think, regardless of their skin tone. So around 30 minutes maximum of sun exposure is sufficient, should be sufficient for most people. And everyone should be sun aware, so wearing sunscreen and making sure that you are covered up so you don't get burns, which can lead to skin cancers.
So sun cream is okay to wear during your exposure time?
So no, don't wear sunscreen, because that will prevent your skin from absorbing the sun rays that you need.
So that's useful when you said about exposure, because I know some of the local community, they do have to cover up. So it's making sure that your parts of your body that, in being moderate in regards to exposure, that some parts of your body are exposed to the sun, isn't it, in regards to what's acceptable?
Yes. And that's another high risk group I didn't mention. So people that tend to be covered up, whether that's for religious reasons, are also at high risk of having low vitamin D.
So you mentioned some of the foods that we can get vitamin D from. So you said meats mainly. So what if you're vegetarian? You mentioned eggs. Is there any other types of food? I think I read somewhere oily fish is yes. good for vitamin D. Is there any other foods that are suitable for vegetarians or vegans?
So not particularly. So if you are going to try and increase vitamin D through your diet, it's recommended that you take a vitamin D supplement. And what's interesting is that there are two different sources of vitamin D. We can get it from animal products or plant products. So if you do have ethical reasons against using animal products or religious reasons, that might be something to consider when you are purchasing vitamin D supplements.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Might I add something to that?
Yes, please do.
You have to be careful with vitamin supplements that you don't overtake vitamin supplements, because that can be detrimental as well. And that can cause a buildup of calcium in the body, which is not a good thing. So you've got to be really careful taking supplements.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So they usually are prescribed by doctors, is that right, Sarge?
No, you can buy it over the counter, and most of these sort of supplements you can buy in Boots or any supermarket, they can be bought. What you need to be really careful of is your daily intake, and ensuring that actually you don't over ingest vitamin D through your diet, because that is detrimental as well.
Okay, so that's really interesting to hear then. So is it inexpensive, or is it quite costly, or can, in some cases, I assume that GPs can prescribe it? I know in certain communities that you've got the Flying Start project, that they perhaps provide the Abidec, is that right, for babies and children that potentially are vulnerable to deficiency?
Yes, so it can be quite a costly addition to your weekly spend or monthly spend if you're buying supplements. So it can be prescribed if you are found to have severely low vitamin D deficiency. And yes, there are government-led programs targeted at young children to make sure they get enough vitamin D. But on the topic of public health issues and barriers that might prevent people from having enough vitamin D, cost is definitely one of them. Mm-hmm. And in terms of the communities of people that tend to be affected by low vitamin D, they might not be from the most affluent areas or have the most affluent background. So these things need to be considered when educating people about getting vitamin D. They might not be able to afford supplements. So giving the healthy lifestyle advice, like making sure you're going outside enough and adjusting a diet, I think are really important public health messages to get across. And that was our main focus for the Grangetown health literacy event we did.
And I think it's quite timely as well in the winter months as well, where the sun is low, isn't it? But to try to get out, and I think it links with that healthy lifestyle message that you're trying to give. And diet would be another way to supplement. And I think some of the people that were visiting the event mentioned foods such as mushrooms. They're a good source of vitamin D, the pulses. And we talked about the oily fish, the eggs and the meat products as well. And beans, isn't it? And pulses. So that's really good to hear. So in regards to the actual event, tell us a little bit more about the event. So, Sarju, I know you were involved from an organisation point, and there was good support from the medical team, the medical academics and the medical team with the students. So can you tell us a little bit about the day and who was involved?
Yeah, I mean, the key there is that Kendra and Akma came to me and said they really are concerned about vitamin D and the information that's particularly within the ethnic communities, the lack of information may be hampering their knowledge of this, and particularly around winter months and sun and the other signs of mental health issues, nausea, fatigue, that may manifest themselves in these communities but may not be attributed to vitamin D deficiency but may be assigned to something else. And actually, sometimes this can be remedied by just supplementing vitamin D, can alleviate most of these symptoms. And then Kendra and I had a conversation, and we looked at the Grangetown community, which is a very diverse and ethnically diverse community. And we thought that's a good place for us to start and sort of go out and roll out the educational elements of vitamin D. And it was really supportive from the Community Gateway Project, and Ali Abdia really helped us put this together, and Corey. And we felt, you know, obviously it went quite well, and I think the community learned a lot about the community from the day.
There was some really good feedback from the community, and I think you demystified a lot of the myths. I really like to see, I know I was involved from a supportive element for the nursing students who were involved, but I really liked seeing that the staff dressed in yellow, linking with the sun, the student tables and stalls were really helpful. And I know a lot of the feedback from members of the public was very positive to demystify some of those issues. And I know you provided some goodie bags with some supplements and some healthy foods that would supplement vitamin D. And it was a two-way process because, you know, you created those conversations about some of the symptoms that you've just actually described, Sarju, with some of the people who were visiting as well and their experiences. So you mentioned Ali Abdi was involved, so he's got links with Cardiff University and really got, you know, the marketing for that, behind the marketing of that, and really appreciated that. We had Dr. Kofi joined us from the local university health board, and there were some students from local schools. Was that right, Sarju? They came and did some talks as well.
Yeah, so these were students who are looking at healthcare professions down the line. These were GCSE students, actually.
Right.
And one of the things we're trying to do is encourage these students to see healthcare professions and options for them. And so we try as much as we can to get them involved in events like this. Because it's really good to have people or children from those communities involved in events rather than just being the participant or the receivers of the information.
Yeah, and it strengthens those links with that community engagement and that civic mission, isn't it? Kendra, what about the students that were involved who came along? There was a good, healthy, you know, number of students that were involved in the day. They all seemed to enjoy. I know the feedback from the nursing student was that, you know, they'd never worked with interprofessionals in a student capacity. So what was your take on it? You know, what were your highlights from the day?
Yes, it was an amazing opportunity for students, which would be agreed by my vice president at the time, Amaka Dibigbo. It was really nice to see students just gathering together. There was such a great community spirit, which was agreed by everyone. And we wanted to reach out to students, yes, for the interprofessional education element. We're all going to be working together in some capacity in the future. So it's great to start collaborating at such an early stage in our careers, but also from the EDI aspect, and a lot of the people in Grangetown we might not encounter during our clinical placements. We might not hear or understand about the issues that affect their healthcare. So we thought it would be good to start these conversations now and to just get students thinking more about their clinical practice and how they can help these communities in the future.
And I think it was all about health improvement as well. You mentioned EDI, equality, diversity, inclusion. I know we had Professor Paul Brennan with us supporting the event. Jeff Barry was there as well. So I think that was a really good kind of supportive mechanism for the students that were there as well. And it was a united event, wasn't it?
Yes. And we really, really appreciated the effort the staff put in to supporting a student idea. It was amazing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there was a real buzz around the day. It was almost like a celebratory event.
Yeah.
So any other messages that you want to promote in regards to vitamin D and the importance of it that, you know, would be important to include in this podcast, Kendra?
Regarding the importance of vitamin D, when I speak to a lot of people or I tell them about how I did this event, they say things like, oh, but vitamin D deficiency affects everyone in the UK. There's no real public health message to put across. But I disagree with that. And research does show that really signs of really severe vitamin D deficiency, like rickets and osteomalacia, are on the rise in these communities that are at high risk. So I think it's really important that the government does put more of an emphasis on how we can prevent vitamin D deficiency to protect these population groups.
Brilliant. And I think that is an important message. And I believe that we did do another event, didn't we, with Women Connect. And we had a diverse array of ladies who joined us to talk about their experiences. And they were from a wide range of communities as well. And they talked about the importance of vitamin D and some of the symptoms that they'd encountered and subsequently have overcome with supplementation and more, just much more awareness, really. And that was another successful event. Thank you. Sarge, any other things to mention about...
What we're going to remember is that most of the ethnic communities come from areas or regions of the world which have lots of sunshine, and their bodies are used to having that amount of sunshine. When you move further north into the northern hemisphere, the amount of sun you get and the amount of daylight you get starts to reduce, and it has a significant impact. So going back to what Pedro was saying, certain communities and ethnic groups are more susceptible. It's not that no one's, there's only these groups are susceptible, just more at risk than others because of the skin tone and the need for sunlight and the lack of sunlight as you move north, further north in the world.
And I think to go back to one of the points that you raised, Sarge, I think is important to emphasise, is that balance and moderation. And I think with vitamin D, it's closely linked with calcium intake, isn't it? And how it helps calcium go into the bones. And I think, it's that having that balanced diet and with the vitamin D alongside the calcium intake is important. Is that right?
You're right there. So, one of the things that vitamin does is moderate and modulate the amount of calcium and potassium in the body and helps maintain healthy levels. And then obviously, if you don't have enough vitamin D, then you don't, that has an effect on the calcium and potassium levels, which has symptoms attached to that. But having too much vitamin D also increases the amount of calcium and potassium, which has its own negative impact as well. So the key there is not more is you take supplements or just supplement everything. You've got to understand your intake. And the best advice that I gave Dr. Coffey gave was, when in doubt, go and seek medical advice.
Mm-hmm. Because blood tests and things like that can help with those kind of, get an a true assessment on the individual, I assume. Yeah. Good.
And
thank you.
Just to emphasize that medical advice can come from your pharmacist as well.
Visitors as well is another good source as well. So any healthcare professional really, and practice nurses and things like that. So if anybody's got any thoughts or any symptoms that they're not sure about, the advice would be to seek medical advice from either your local pharmacy or GP surgery. Thank you for that.
So I was going to add that, and that's really important to ask the question, because, it's one of those things that we found also that it's not one of the default positions clinicians go to or GPs go to when it comes to checking your vitamin D levels. There is an assumption that those things are normally okay, and it's not, that is not necessarily the cause. And it's always important, particularly if you have a dark skin tone, to see whether that is a potential issue there.
And is there a line of thinking that maybe perhaps supplement in the winter months and then try and be as out in the sunshine as much as you can in the summer months? I think that's the way that I kind of consider my vitamin D intake, that I supplement myself through the winter months, but during the summer I try and be outside as much as I can.
Yes, so from about late March to September, those are the months where you can, in theory, get enough sunlight. But for at-risk groups, the government still does recommend to take a supplement throughout the year.
Okay, interesting. Thank you ever so much, both, for your time. Really interesting information there, and I'm sure our listeners will have got some useful information from that. So thank you again.
We will now hear from those who attended the Public Health Grangetown Vitamin D event.
Hello, what year group are you in and what do you study?
I'm a fourth year and I study medicine.
Thank you. And what has been your highlight from today?
My highlight from today is talking to different people in the community, getting involved. I think as a uni student, you don't get to, you know, be involved in the community in Cardiff, so it's been really interesting. And I've learned about vitamin D from other people. So that's been a good experience for me as a student. So yeah, learning and teaching. So I've learned that just because you live in a hot country doesn't mean necessarily you're going to get vitamin D. And there's many factors as to why you're going to be deficient. The clothes you wear and the kind of culture around going outside. And I learned that you only need 10 minutes in the sun to get your vitamin D.
Did any comments or conversations stand out to you today?
Yes, I spoke to someone who knew a lot about nature and where you can get natural sources of vitamin D, and he talked about dandelion roots and some other plants, so I'm going to go home and research that actually.
Any other comments?
I think we should do more things like this.
Yeah.
I think we should definitely do another vitamin D on Wednesday, maybe next year. And yeah, it was great.
Thank you so much for helping today.
Yeah, so I was talking to one of the people from the community that came to the event today, and he was basically saying that he doesn't believe in things like sunscreen, and like he was asking about the importance of vitamin D. And I think it's just a very, very interesting to kind of remind yourself that every patient is going to be different, and that everybody in the community has different like understandings or opinions on certain things. And it was actually very refreshing to have that conversation, because it's like we often think that everyone thinks the same.
Yeah.
When it comes to certain things like vitamin D, or things that we in our heads like, oh, it's simple, like we've been told, like wear sunscreen, like sunscreen, like take your supplements. But then for other people, it's like, oh, I don't believe in that. I don't. And to me, that's the beauty of conversation, isn't it? And that's what medicine is about, like knowing that patients are going to think differently. And that's okay. That's completely okay. Like, you can give them the counsel that you believe would benefit them. But if they don't take it, then that's personal responsibility. So.
Did he agree by the end of it?
No. Respect it. Like, we had a very good rapport, and I don't think that's the aim of conversations.
Yeah.
I don't believe that we should be going into conversation with the mindset of I'm going to convince you of X, Y, and Z, because that's not how relationships are formed. But it was good.
I think that's relevant because of all the myths of COVID, the misconceptions, and having conversations with patients.
Yeah, and also allowing people to have these conversations and have different opinions.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Because nowadays there seems to be, unfortunately, a thing where people aren't allowed to think for themselves, or actually voice things that are different, maybe because they're scared or they don't think their opinions are respected. It's okay to have an opinion. It doesn't mean that it's necessarily the truth.
It's okay to have an opinion. And to voice it. And to
exactly.
People have a platform to actually have their voices heard.
It's true.
It was, I had a great day. Thanks so much. Thanks so much. Okay, so could you say what you study and your year group?
I study medicine and I'm in second year.
Okay, thank you. And how have you found Vitamin D Awareness Day?
I think it was a learning experience, because it also showed me how much the public doesn't know about vitamin D and the importance of it, and that overdose and all the problems that can happen. Mm-hmm. And as people of color, I think it's important to know that even though it's sunny and that we have darker skin doesn't mean we have vitamin D.
Okay, and what's been a highlight from today?
I think talking to the community and interacting with people has been an experience, and even little kids, trying to get them involved and make them aware from a young age.
Did any comments today or questions stand out to you?
Yeah, I think one of the ladies I was trying to give a survey form asked me how do they check their vitamin D levels, so people aren't aware that you can do blood tests and things. Mm-hmm. And also some people weren't aware of how it helps your bones, and an overdose can cause weak bones, and like, they don't know the science behind it, which I thought is a good thing that we're doing this project.
Do you think this event has had an impact?
Yeah, definitely.
And what kind of impacts do you think? Is it going to affect your practice, your clinical practice?
Yeah, I think teaching people about the benefits and also the risks of it,
mm-hmm.
and the users of it, and why it's such an important vitamin is.
Oh, did you have low vitamin D? Is that okay? What kind of symptoms did you have?
I got dizzy really quickly. I had really pale skin and my hair was really thin.
Oh, how did you, so did you like go to the doctor with these concerns then?
Yeah, I told my mum and a lot of my family has vitamin D deficiency because we come from a certain minority where it's very common and yeah, that's how I knew basically.
Oh, okay. Well, are you feeling better now since you've taken them?
Yeah, I have more energy now. My whole family also has it. I've lived here my whole life and it's obviously not very hot. So that's another big reason why.
Hi Ali, can you tell us a little bit about today and the success of today's event on vitamin D, the collaboration between Medic and Nursing and Cardiff University?
Yeah, it's been a hugely successful event. As you can see, there are people still here after the event has practically come to an end. We started at 1 p.m. where we opened our doors up to the community to find out more about vitamin D awareness, particularly because we did this here in Grangetown. Grangetown's home to lots of communities from Black and African and Asian backgrounds, and we know how much vitamin D is impacted upon them. The staff at the university raised awareness to members of the community would only help the community with combating this issue, being more aware, being able to take medicine or vitamins at the right time of the year. And I think just having the opportunity to speak to professionals and soon-to-be professionals makes a huge difference. I think we're very blessed with students from Cardiff University who are almost going to become doctors and also doctors as well. So yeah, I'm really delighted as somebody who's as a local resident and also a member of our staff here on this project in Grangetown to welcome the university's School of Healthcare Sciences, School of Medicine.
Fitzalan School is here as well with local students.
The local students from Fitzalan here. There's also like the local residents who really gained a lot from today.
Good.
And I'm walking away from today's afternoon more aware of vitamin D, the risks of being deficient in vitamin D. And I think that I'm also really looking forward to the next series of health events delivered by the university partners and the schools and the staff. So I really want to say a big thank you to the team of the university. There's so many names, so I'm not going to name anybody just in case I get into serious trouble with somebody who I might miss out. But thank you very much to everybody and to all the students who helped make this happen.
Sajid Patel wants to increase awareness of the potential health problems caused by a lack of vitamin D.
Thank you. We felt there was a lack of information regarding vitamin D and how important it was. And this affects particularly people from ethnic backgrounds, predominantly when it comes to their health and well-being. And we thought it was a good idea to raise awareness, not just on how to treat it, but also how to prevent it. The best part of medicine is that prevention is better than the cure.
Kofi Abobi has been a doctor for about 25 years. He knows the importance of vitamin D from looking after his patients. But he finds it difficult to educate people about it.
Some of the challenges are breaking the myth. And breaking the myth is that then some people believe that depending on your socioeconomic status, I'm not going to be at risk of vitamin D deficiency. So that's a myth. The other myth that is available is that particularly then only certain people get it.
Let's now hear from Health Visitor Beth.
My name's Dr. Ricky Hellier, and I'm a colleague of Diana's at Cardiff University School of Healthcare Sciences. And as part of this vitamin D podcast, what I'm going to do is have a little chat to my wife. And I'll let her tell you all about herself now.
I specialise in working with families with children aged 0 to 5. To identify health needs as early as possible to improve health and well-being through promoting health, preventing ill health, and reducing inequalities.
That's quite the list, isn't it? So basically, as you know, this podcast is about vitamin D. And before we get onto that, you told us a bit about your role. Can you tell us about where you work, please?
Yeah, I work in the Grangetown, Bute Town, Riverside areas of Cardiff.
And can you tell us a little bit about the sort of community you work with?
Yes, it's mainly black and ethnic minority community, but there's people from all places,
places like Romania, from Africa, India, Pakistan, all over the world.
So it's massively diverse, isn't it? And that area, Cardiff, is well renowned for being sort of like diverse, multicultural, and it has been for a very long time, isn't it? You know, very rich, diverse communities there. So as you know, this podcast is about vitamin D, and we've spoken about it amongst ourselves. Diana and the people she interviewed talked about the importance of vitamin D and sort of the impacts that vitamin D deficiency can have on people. Is this a bit of a problem where you work?
Yeah, it's a big problem where I work. One, because a lot of the mums breastfeed in the area, and breastfed babies are particularly vulnerable to vitamin D deficiency. And also people from the Black and ethnic minority community are more likely to be deficient in vitamin D.
Yeah, yeah, and that's what they said earlier on about the different reasons about why that's the case, isn't it? So in terms of like knowledge about vitamin D amongst the people you work with and the communities you work with, is there a big understanding of what vitamin D deficiency is? Do people sort of got awareness of it?
No, really when we go in at days 10 to 14, you know, I often ask them if they're using any vitamin supplements, and they aren't. Actually, they're given in their bounty pack from the hospital a free sample of vitamin D drops, but a lot of them don't know what they're for, and haven't even got them out of the packet. So we educate them in what it's for, and advise them to give them to the babies.
Can you tell us what a bounty pack is, sorry?
A bounty pack is a pack that's given to every parent who has a baby in hospital. So it's got a range of products in it, really.
Yeah, oh, fantastic. And I know in Diana's interview, she talked about the importance, and the health professional she was working with talked about the importance of dosing in terms of vitamin D. So when you come across particularly the families you're dealing with, particularly the mums you're dealing with, is vitamin D deficiency something that in general, I know this is hard to sort of, it's a big brush I'm sweeping with, is it something people have heard of, or is it something they're not aware of?
Some people are. Some are quite well read on it. Others say they've never heard of it. Especially if they're not long to the UK from other countries. You know, if they're from a country where there's lots of sunshine, it's not something they think that they would need because they'd get it in every day from the sun. But obviously being in the UK, especially in Wales, we don't get a lot of sun half of the year. So they won't get the requirements from the sun.
And at what stage would you start having discussions with families about the potential need for supplementation or the potential need for sort of addressing vitamin D?
At the birth visit, very first contact, we bring up vitamin D. We recommend it to all breastfeeding mums, to all babies, and to all children aged 1 to 5 years.
And how do you identify the people who are particularly at risk of vitamin D deficiency?
Well, the Black and ethnic minority community are vulnerable because they don't absorb it from the sun. They need a lot longer out in the sunshine than white and Caucasian people, and also people who cover up. So Muslim women who wear the niqab and the hijab, if they're covering up, they're not going to be able to absorb that vitamin D.
And so how do you go about having that first conversation? What do you do when you go in on that birth visit?
Well, if they're breastfeeding, for instance, it's recommended that all breastfeeding mums, no matter, you know, what colour their skin is, it's recommended that all breastfeeding mums are supplemented. So I advise that at the birth visit. All breastfed babies, you know, it's advised. So I advise that. And it's just something we generally talk about as part of our role.
Yeah, okay then. In terms of, you said, you know, that maybe not everybody understands and about vitamin D deficiency, what are the sort of biggest barriers, do you think, or the biggest reasons that people don't understand? You talked about maybe people coming from different countries.
Yes, it could be the language barriers, the level of literacy as well can sometimes impact as well. And, you know, what their family have done themselves as well.
Oh, so previous generations, yeah, who might have lived in this country. And have you got sort of strategies that you try and use to overcome literacy or?
We use interpreters. We use a lot of face-to-face interpreters or language line as well.
Yeah, yeah. And Is it something, because you address this and it sounds like really well planned and obviously, so who, actually, before I go on to that, who guides this advice? Where did you get this advice from? Is it
the government? Yeah, the Department of Health and Social Care recommends is the guidelines.
Yeah, okay then. In terms of vitamin D deficiency, and we know the issues that it can have, particularly things about sort of bone growth and bone health and calcium absorption and issues like that. Is this an, do you see any sort of adverse outcomes within the community from not having enough vitamin D, or is this something that's really well addressed so we're avoiding that?
No, I have seen a little boy who was breastfed, was born during the COVID pandemic, so kept indoors a lot during his early days, and he had rickets.
Well, never.
Yeah.
That sounds like something from the past, doesn't it? You know? In terms of, you said about supplementation, how else do you advise women? And I think you'd have to sort of be, you know, that requires a lot of cultural awareness, really. Because you can't just advise someone who wears the niqab just to expose themselves more to the sun.
So it's supplementation is what we advise. In that case, if they are covered up, if they are darker skinned, it's still advisable that they have supplements.
Yeah, and they mentioned in Diana's interview about maybe getting it from diet and stuff like that. Is something else you advise?
You know, you can get it from diet, but not enough. If supplementation is the only way to get the recommended dosage.
Okay. You mentioned breastfed babies, though. How about formula?
Well, the formula milks are all fortified, so they've all got the daily requirements of vitamin D fortified in them.
So usually then if families are formula feeding their babies, you don't advise further supplementation on top of
not
that?
Not until they're taking less than 500 mils a day of formula milk. If they're taking less than 500 mils a day of formula milk, that's when we'd recommend supplementation.
All right then, okay. Well, that's been really interesting, Beth. Thanks very much for sharing your experience with us. We really appreciate it.
In closing, I'd like to thank all those who contributed to this Vitamin D podcast. Those who would like to find out more, please visit the Public Health Wales or England or NICE website for more information.